Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from SIRI, an Alaska Native corporation with operations and investments spanning 5 continents, 45 states, and 2 U.S. territories.
Layoffs, early outs, you know, this whole period has just been so up in the air and questionable.
A new contract for Alaska Airlines workers could make them the highest paid employees in their industry. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, July 28th. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, school districts struggle to hire teachers ahead of the new school year.
We are close to the beginning of the year, so there's a lot of concern. People are working overtime to try to find high quality educators for our students.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Are you ready to start accelerating your child's future through education? The Alaska Native Science and Engineering Program is expanding its reach with new opportunities in Juneau and Southeast Alaska. With ANSEP's Acceleration Academy, high school students can earn college credit, save thousands of dollars in college costs, and experience fun, hands-on learning. ANSEP, it's a better way to learn. Learn more and enroll at ansep.net/acceleration. This message sponsored by ANSEP.
Alaska school districts are struggling to find teachers and other staff heading into the school year this fall, and currently there are more than 1,000 jobs open at schools around the state. That's according to reporting by the Alaska Beacon, which found that Alaska school districts faced many challenges in recruiting, and so far there have been few solutions. Alaska Beacon reporter Lisa Fu has been looking into the state's teacher shortage and joins us now. Lisa, how bad is this teacher staffing and recruitment issue?
It seems pretty bad right now. I talked with Bobby Bolin. He's the brand new human resources director at North Slope Borough School District. He was trying to fill around 50 teaching positions there. He said getting classrooms staffed for students is their focus 24 hours a day. And you know, he's not the only one working around the clock. I spoke with Lisa Parody last week. She's executive director of the Alaska Council of School Administrators. Here's what she had to say.
What I'm hearing from administrators is that many districts are not staffed. We are close to the beginning of the year, so there's a lot of concern. People are working overtime to try to find high quality educators for our students. And we are at an all-time high in Alaska for turnover at every level.
If you go to the Alaska Teacher Placement website, that's a statewide education job clearinghouse, you'll see more than 1,000 jobs open in school districts all over Alaska. And to be clear, that's not all teaching positions. It actually includes all areas of school staff, like principals, teachers, special education, paraeducators, language teachers, counselors, speech pathologists, support staff, and sports coaches. So like Lisa Parody said, we're looking at job openings at all levels.
Gotcha. Well, it sounds like this has been building into more of a problem over the years. Why is that?
Yeah, I heard that from several people I talked to, including Tony McFadden. Tony is the manager of Alaska Teacher Placement. She said the severity of the issue has been years in the making. Tony told me how this trend can be seen, for example, in the declining attendance of the spring job fair that Alaska Teacher Placement holds every March.
You know, back in the 80s and even the early 90s, at the spring job fair, there were 1,000 plus candidates looking for jobs. This year, we had about 75 candidates at the spring job fair looking for jobs. Now, did it go from 1,100 to 75 in 1 year or 2 years? No. Every year, it's just fewer and fewer and fewer.
As to the causes, a lot of people connect the turbulence in the teaching field with the pandemic. And that has, of course, played a factor. COVID has impacted staffing shortages in all kinds of industries. But the national teacher shortage predates the pandemic.
So you talked to some teachers for this story. What else did they tell you?
Well, I spoke with an educator in Florida who almost accepted a teaching job in Teller. His name is Wayne McKnight. Ultimately, Wayne didn't think he could withstand the weather, and he didn't want to risk the possibility of not being able to fly home for the holidays due to weather-related travel issues. He said it was a difficult decision, but he did turn down the offer. You know, and then another reason Wayne turned down the job was because the state would have required him to take a test and a couple classes, which he just simply wasn't willing to do. And the state is working on solutions to remove barriers like those.
Okay, so Lisa, full disclosure, my mom was a teacher here in Alaska, and when she started down that career path, she was offered a defined benefit retirement plan, more like a pension, rather than the defined contribution plan that teachers are currently offered. So there are other things the state's trying, but isn't that a big part of this problem, that prospective teachers aren't being offered benefits that will keep them around?
Basically, everyone I talk to, administrators, education experts, they all mention lack of a pension as a hindrance to recruiting teachers. One superintendent I talked to said Alaska used to be super attractive to educators because we had a really good retirement system. That's not the case anymore. House Bill 220, which would have reopened the state's closed pension programs for teachers, got some traction in the legislature, but didn't pass. In an effort to improve teacher retention and recruitment in Alaska, Governor Mike Dunleavy formed a working group to identify the root causes of the issues and to propose solutions. Based on survey results of Alaska teachers, the group recommended restructuring retirement options as one of its 6 action plan items.
Right, but here we are heading towards the school year. What happens if a school district or even a particular school doesn't have enough teachers?
School administrators mentioned some fixes, returning to distance delivery or online school, contacting retired teachers, looking at substitute lists and long-term subs. For longer-term solutions, several districts, including in the Kenai Peninsula and Bering Strait, they already have what they call grow your own programs that allow districts to fill positions from within.
All right. So you mentioned they might be contacting retired teachers. Is my poor mom going to be called back into a classroom?
I don't know, Casey. Maybe.
All right. Well, that was Alaska Beacon reporter Lisa Fu. You can read her full story at alaskabeacon.com. Lisa, thanks for being here.
Thanks, Casey.
The International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers recently negotiated a deal for Alaska Airlines customer service agents, cargo workers, and other employees. Leadership say it would make them the highest paid airline employees in the industry. Alaska Public Media's Kavitha George reports.
In a break room tucked under the south terminal of the Anchorage Airport, Richard Johnson greets Alaska Airlines ramp workers on their breaks.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for taking a couple minutes to let us say hello.
Johnson is General Vice President of Air Transport for IAMAW. He and other union leaders are making the rounds to check in with members who are currently voting on a new contract agreement with Alaska Airlines. The union represents Alaska Airlines reservations and customer service agents and ramp workers, the people you see sorting baggage and guiding planes on the tarmac. Their current contract wasn't set to expire for another 2 years, but Johnson says both the union and Alaska Airlines were motivated to get to the negotiating table last month to try to address industry-wide staffing struggles.
And so we went into that process and we got a contract extension in 2 weeks, which under normal circumstances seems to take 2 to 3 years.
The tentative agreement would raise base wages as much as 17% starting next month, with more scheduled raises down the line. It includes job security clauses as well as longevity pay increases. The new agreement would keep benefits the same. Johnson says the pay bump will make IAMAW represented Alaska Airlines employees the highest paid in their job category in the industry. He says recent staff shortages have caused a crisis for airline workers, from burnout and forced overtime to higher injury rates and having to deal with frustrated, unruly passengers. Johnson hopes higher wages will help attract more workers and push other airlines to address the issue as well.
Without a doubt, 100%, it raises the bar, and everybody has been put on notice, and they know it.
Christopher Smith is a ramp worker in Anchorage who's been with Alaska Airlines for 26 years. He says after a lot of pandemic uncertainty, he's happy with the proposed contract agreement.
You know, layoffs, early outs, you know, this whole period has just been so up in the air and questionable. So it's nice to get some, you know, some clarity for us and something that's stable.
Do you think you're going to vote yes?
I already did. So, yeah. And I'm not shy about telling people that.
An Alaska Airlines spokesperson said the company is, quote, thrilled to make a meaningful investment in its employees. Voting for the tentative agreement ends August 2nd. If it's approved, the new contract will go into effect August 10th. Meanwhile, according to industry news site Simple Flying, Alaska Airlines is still negotiating an agreement with its pilots, who voted to authorize a strike in May. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Kavitha George.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, for the first time, European green crabs have been found alive in Alaska.
They go after salmon habitat, and they go after most of all of our subsistence lifestyle.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Invasive plants and animals threaten Alaska's environment and economy and can spread to new locations by hitching a ride. Anyone can help prevent the spread of invasive species by remembering to play clean go, removing all plants, animals, and mud from boots, gear, and vehicles before entering and leaving recreational areas will help stop invasive species in their tracks. Learn more at playcleango.org. This message sponsored by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service.
Alaska has the fastest rising opioid overdose rate in the nation, and Southeast Alaska has the state's second highest rate of overdose death. Village public safety officers are often the only first responders in the region's remote communities. As KTOO's Claire Strempel reports, there was a special training for them in Juneau last week.
Under the fluorescent lights of a classroom, Logan James Lee is pumping on the chest of a CPR dummy. He's a security officer for the Central Council of Tlingit and Haida Indian Tribes of Alaska. He practices giving instructions to a bystander.
Can you please turn on AED?
Yeah.
And then go from there while talking on speaker.
James Lee is sweating by the time he's done.
Yes, that was a workout, but I was nervous.
Then it's Michael Betts' turn.
Hey, man. Hey.
This time, he's told the dummy is overdosing on opioids.
He's not breathing. You don't see any chest rise and fall.
Betts kneels and gives the dummy a shake, then checks its pulse. He quickly unwraps a package of naloxone nasal spray, sticks it in the dummy's nose, and sprays.
Now you've got him, but he's swinging.
A trainer from the fire department prompts him.
Hey, calm down. I don't know what to do.
Yeah, so with these guys, you're always going to want to call 911. Once you administer that Narcan and it kicks in, they're going to go into immediate withdrawals.
Betts is a village public safety officer for the community of Heideberg on Prince of Wales Island. He's the only first responder who lives in the community of about 400 people. State troopers are about 45 minutes away at best if he needs backup. He says he knows a lot of opioids are trafficked into and through Heideberg, but he hasn't had to resuscitate a real person with naloxone yet.
Like, everybody probably has Narcan in their purse, in their glove box, somewhere in their house, in a drawer. A lot of times we don't even get called. We hear about it the next day.
Betts and eight other people came to Juneau to take part in an opioid overdose response course offered by the Central Council of Tlingit and Haida Indian Tribes of Alaska with funds from a federal grant. The role play here in a classroom is meant to prepare him and other VPSOs for an overdose situation where they're likely to be the first person on the scene.
If you look at a definition of first responder, that's what the VPSO is.
Jason Wilson runs the Public Safety Department for Central Council. He says VPSOs are more than just law enforcement.
They're also EMTs. They're also the ambulance driver. They're the fire chief, or they're a part of the fire department. They're a big part of the search and rescue within a community. They're animal control.
Central Council runs the VPSO program for the Southeast Alaska communities of Cake Angoon, Pelican, Saxman, Heidelberg, Thorn Bay, and Kassan.
And the toolbox for our VPSOs and being able to respond to overdoses was really important to the tribe and in our communities.
They're not just learning how to treat a health emergency. They're also learning how to police narcotics. One of their instructors is Chris Questis, a former police detective and a national drug expert. He said Alaska is seeing a peak in opioids, especially fentanyl, and that the state has the same distribution patterns and the same underground market network of narcotics as he sees nationwide.
What the challenge is how do we minimize their influence in communities and villages in Alaska?
That's a challenge because these remote communities are small and have few law enforcement resources. But Questis says it's also a strength. He thinks the VPSO program is ahead of the national curve, because individual officers have so many roles.
You are actually able to participate in some of the prevention and intervention and even the community education components to reduce some of the risk factors in the community.
He said that's the direction he expects a lot of law enforcement agencies in the lower 48 to take. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Claire Strempel.
A new wing at Chief Andrew Isaac Health Center opened in Fairbanks this month. The expansion adds a three-story, 108,000-square-foot addition to the existing Native Health Clinic, making specialized health care closer for village residents, particularly elders in the interior. KUAC's Robin has more.
Tanana Chiefs Conference has been the health services provider for Alaska Natives in the interior since the late 1970s. At the ceremony to open the new wing, TCC Chief Brian Ridley recalled the history of Native health care in Fairbanks.
I hear our elders talk about how we started out in the bowling alley in one room with one provider.
TCC took up residence on two floors of Fairbanks Memorial Hospital in the 80s and named this space after Chief Andrew Isaac of Dot Lake. But eventually, the need outgrew that space. And in 2012, a new building opened up across the street from the hospital. Now, another building next door will allow new services and the expansion of existing ones. The third floor of the new building is still unfinished to provide for future expansion. Trimble Gilbert of Arctic Village, First Traditional Chief, offered the Lord's Prayer in Gwich'in and blessed the new building.
So let us pray. Nahotki Jezhen Kurschik, Naurishin Jujudin, Nakoki Kwadat and Juji, Nayinji Jezhuk in Nankakotokunji.
TCC serves 41 villages and clients in Fairbanks in a giant service region covering more than a third of Alaska. All Indian Health Services beneficiaries can be treated at Chief Andrew Isaac Health Center. As part of the ceremony, soil brought from member villages was placed on young birch trees in the open garden area between clinic buildings.
Today, this soil will finally be returned to the earth on our property.
Andy Jimmy, Second Traditional Chief, thanked the member tribes for their investment and support. He said when he first started at TCC, health aides in the villages were working out of their own homes.
The whole TCC region, the villages, made it possible for us to complete this. But we're not done yet. We still got a ways to go. And I want to thank everyone.
When the ceremony for the building was done, it was time to go through the doors. In Fairbanks, I'm Robin.
Wildlife monitors in Metlakatla say they've found more than a dozen invasive European green crabs in the waters around Annette Island. As KRBD's Reagan Miller reports, they're the first live samples spotted in Alaska.
When invasive green crabs were first spotted on the beaches of Annette Island on July 22nd, the critters were dead. This time, they were alive. Staff from the community's Division of Fish and Wildlife have been combing the beaches and waters around Metlakatla for the five-spined, spindly-legged critters that federal officials have called one of the most invasive marine species around. And on Wednesday, the tribe announced they found 10 live crabs. That tally includes 4 from late last week and 6 from Tuesday. And Albert Smith, Metlakatla's mayor, says that 3 more crabs were caught on Thursday for a total of 13. The crabs are largely falling into salmon traps around Tamgis Harbor.
A salmon trap that's been there for hundreds of years, and that's kind of where they're congregating a little bit because it's like a tide pool. So that's where they've been catching them.
Shrimp pots are also being used to catch the crabs, which is how staff from the Division of Fish and Wildlife caught at least one crab on Thursday. Another was found in an area with lots of eelgrass. Of the 13 trapped live crabs, 3 are female and 10 are male. Smith says the tribe scientists are preserving them alive for now for research.
We put them in a bucket of water and then put them in the refrigerator until they can get all the data they need from them.
Smith says that the crabs can live for pretty long under those conditions and that the seawater in the buckets is routinely changed out. In a statement, Metlakatla Indian Community says tribal officials are working with federal and state partners to conduct genetic analysis and outreach efforts. Smith says he's concerned about what it means for the community's traditional food sources.
They go after salmon habitat and salmon fry. Also, they go after most of all of our subsistence lifestyle.
But at the same time, the discoveries haven't been a total surprise.
We've been watching them work their way up the coast into Haida Gwaii and then also over by Prince Rupert last year, which isn't far from here.
Smith says he'd like to avoid a situation like Washington State's experience dealing with the invasive crabs. The appearance of the species prompted Governor Jay Inslee to issue an emergency proclamation. For now, Metlakatla scientists are keeping an eye on the area and trapping the crabs. The goal of that work is to learn more about just how many might be in the area. As for what to do with the crabs, NOAA strongly advises against releasing the invasive crabs back into the water. Smith says the community is still discussing options, but he says adding the crabs to the community's garden compost pile might be a good idea. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Reagan Miller.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Are you ready to start accelerating your child's future through education? The Alaska Native Science and Engineering Program is expanding its reach with new opportunities in Juneau and Southeast Alaska. With ANSEP's Acceleration Academy, high school students can earn college credit, save thousands of dollars in college costs, and experience fun, hands-on learning. ANSEP, it's a better way to learn. Learn more and enroll at ansep.net/acceleration. This message sponsored by ANSEP.
The Ironman Alaska Triathlon in Juneau is less than 2 weeks away. Athletes are scrambling after Alaska Airlines notified them that bicycles shipped through them may not arrive in time for the triathlon. KTOO's Jeremy Shea reports.
In an email to customers on Tuesday, Alaska Airlines said that applies to bikes checked as baggage or shipped by Alaska Air Cargo. The airline steered athletes to the Ironman organization to find other shipping options.
I invested a lot of training. It's a little frustrating to think of all the training I put in and this close, and then everything kind of raveled and fell apart at the last minute.
Suzanne Reinhardt is a college administrator in the Chicago area who's been doing Ironman races for a decade. Now 51, she says she was looking forward to doing her last full-length Ironman in Alaska. After she got the email from the airline, she looked into last-minute couriers. The options are limited and expensive. Some require disassembling the bike. Alaska Airlines offered her an earlier flight to Juneau to beat the rush, but that would mean spending a lot more on accommodations, taking more time off work, plus extra headaches coordinating with her travel companion. She decided to cancel her whole trip.
The bike thing was the last straw for me. So that was an absolute, at this point, I'm not going to put forth more money into it. And hassle because of the accommodations are really difficult, and not having a car and trying to coordinate, you know, rebuilding it and paying $1,000 maybe each way to get my bike back and forth.
Mike Arabia is still headed to the race from Southern California. He says he got similar quotes for shipping his bike from UPS and FedEx, but he was able to get an assurance in writing from an Alaska Airlines agent that his bike would arrive by Friday next week.
I'm going to have to cross my fingers and hope that this agent that I chatted with yesterday is correct and that my bike makes it there before race day.
Like Reinhardt, he's unhappy about the last-minute communication for a foreseeable problem. It's too late now, but affordable third-party options for shipping bikes are available with more notice.
Shame on Ironman. Shame on Alaska Airlines for not coordinating early.
Ironman did not immediately respond to a request for comment. In a statement, Alaska Airlines says they've been communicating with the Ironman organization for the last year with a goal to convey key travel information to athletes. The airline says its email to customers about bike capacity was a backstop, quote, in the event they had not heard from the Ironman organization. Other athletes do appear to be opting for some of those expensive shipping options. Ken Hill owns the shop Juneau Bike Doctor. He saw a thread about the bike issue on Facebook on Tuesday and offered up his shop as a place for people to send and store their bikes.
So we just decided to kind of put that out there and say, hey, if you need a place to ship to, we can at least receive it for you. The phone's been going crazy and our Facebook messages as well. I literally can't step away from my computer without it piling up.
Within 24 hours, he says 30 to 40 people took him up on the offer. He says he expects bikes to start showing up on Monday. Travel Juno, Juno's destination marketing organization, has been working closely with the race organizers. Executive Director Liz Perry says the race organizers and airline are working together to smooth things out. In Juno, I'm Jeremy Shea.
Golf is not a sport that gets a lot of attention in Alaska, but that could change this weekend. The U.S. Golf Association is bringing the Senior Women's Amateur Championship to the Anchorage Golf Course for a four-day event starting July 30th. Alaska Public Media's Laura Fillion has this report.
Tracy Parsons had never been to a golf course with moose before.
On one of our site visits last year, we did actually see some moose on the driving range, which was pretty spectacular. I don't know any other places where you can be walking up the 18th fairway and see Denali in the background.
Parsons works for the U.S. Golf Association as program director for the Senior Women's Amateur Championship, based in New Jersey. She says 132 players will be in Anchorage to compete.
So this is for competitive female amateurs over the age of 50. So this means that they're not professional in any way, so they're not playing for money. This is strictly for the love of the game.
One of those women is 57-year-old Susan West of Tuscaloosa, Alabama. West is a retired businesswoman who didn't start golfing until she was in her early 40s. She says the sense of community keeps her playing.
But it's just the camaraderie of it, the integrity of the game, the character usually that it brings out, and it's just a really neat sport. We feel very, very blessed to be able to participate in it.
West is one of the top 30 senior amateurs in the country, which gave her an automatic entry into this year's championship. She says she's grateful for that, because qualifying is no picnic.
I mean, anybody can have a bad day and you only get one shot. And so you play and you have a bad day, you don't go. You have to wait till the next year.
Both West and Parsons are excited about coming to Anchorage. West says it's an opportunity to do two things she loves, golf and travel.
So I'm looking forward first and foremost for the competition, but then secondary, how awesome is it that I'm going to get to be at a place like Alaska and then to get to go explore it a little bit afterwards.
Players come from 35 states and 11 countries. The oldest competitor is 75, while the youngest just turned 50 in June, making her eligible to play. Only one player, Pamela Chesla, is from Alaska. She will have the distinction of striking the opening tee shot. In Anchorage, I'm Laura Fillion.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org and wherever you get your podcasts. We had reports tonight from Kavitha George and Laura Fillion in Anchorage, Claire Stremple and Jeremy Shea in Juneau, Robin in Fairbanks, and Reagan Miller in Ketchikan. Our audio engineer is Tobin Shelby, Katie Anastas is our producer, and I'm Casey Grove. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station. Public media is designed for and made possible by the communities it serves. Monies generated through estate and deferred gifts enable public radio to provide our listeners, you, with the level of programming excellence you've come to expect. It may also reduce income and estate taxes. Consult your financial advisor or contact your public radio station to learn more. This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.